TFM.
This is J.G. Hertz, the General Mar Talker on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, I hope you've got your AI-powered image enhancement software ready, because we're going to need it today.
Oh, Chris, I mean, what we can do with photographs these days is so much better than what they could do on Deep Space Nine, I feel like. You know, generative AI can create anything I want. And so I think that's really the biggest question of this episode. Was that actually a picture of Goldar Heel there, or was that just generative AI providing exactly what Kira wanted to see? I think that's the big question.
That is the big question. I think we need to look closely and see if Goldar Heel has three arms. Then we'll know that it's a fake.
It's a fake. Oh, man. All right.
I had to laugh rewatching this episode when Jadzia says I'm running an image enhancement algorithm, because in my work now, I use software from a company called Topaz that does amazing things to enhance less than ideal photos that you receive that need to be run in print. And it feels like it was inspired by Deep Space Nine in this situation. Yeah. So,
well, and can I just say too, Chris, you know, I've noticed this and I don't know exactly what it is, but I guess a few months ago, my wife and I, we purchased a new television. It's an OLED, and very high quality OLED. And I've noticed that the picture quality on the streaming here of Deep Space Nine from Paramount Plus in the U.S. looks very good on the shots where you're inside the station with the characters. Okay. It's the space shots, especially with the station themselves, that do not look as high resolution as you'd want. But I don't know, if it's just the ability of the technology for television to be able to upgrade people and those images well, as opposed to something that, you know, I mean, Deep Space Nine is not a normal thing to see on television in that sense. So, but yeah, I mean, gosh, it just reminds me every time, and I'm going to remind Paramount again.
Yeah.
Right. Put these shows on HD, please, so that they can truly last for the next generation and the next one after that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's probably that your TV has some capability to upscale.
It's got to be. But it does a great job. I mean, I'm constantly surprised at how good the show looks. So, which is wonderful, because, you know, as both you and I, massive fans of the show, we enjoy rewatching it multiple times over. You know, it's made it for a really pleasant experience, especially as my wife and I have been making a slow rewatch of Star Trek for me, and her first time through all of it. So we're in TOS now. And of course, you've got the HD versions of that, which look pristine. And so even though not the same type of television and in general of like Enterprise or something like that, where you get into continuous storytelling, it looks great. So,
well, hopefully we will get DS9 remastered at some point, and Voyager as well.
Great.
And fill in those gaps. So, everyone, today we're going to
continue. That was just for free right there. We had, you know, that had nothing to do with the episode. So,
yeah, right. Exactly. Well, today we're going to continue our 30th anniversary rewatch with Duet. Everyone, this is the 18th episode, next to last episode of season one. And here is a quick rundown of the story. When a Cardassian named Maritza arrives seeking medical help, Kira claims he is the notorious Goldar Hill and wants to punish him for his war crimes. But this case of possible mistaken identity may not be as simple as it seems. At first claiming to have been Darhil's file clerk, Maritza later admits to being the butcher himself. Apparently, he paid his surgeon well to break the spell of aging, leaving Kira to ask, "Is that your chin, or was that war you were raging?" A mystery unfolds aboard the station as psychic spies from Galatep try to steal your mind's elation. It's Kalanorication. So, Matthew, are you ready for a little Red Hot Chili Pepper take on Deep Space Nine there?
Well done, Chris. Well done. Rewatching this episode was really interesting. And part of that, I think, and we were talking on the other side of the orb, was just the idea that it holds up 100%. And spoiler alert, this is legitimately, I think, one of the best episodes of Star Trek of any of the series.
Yep.
But I think this whole season, one of the things that we've been talking about in season one is the way in which this show has, one, been differentiating itself from TNG. But two, has, even within the first season, in that differentiation, has also been building itself, right? In some ways, we are building the world and the universe of Star Trek in a way that we have never seen it, because we are consistently in one place, and therefore it allows us to really play in that universe and to, you know, challenge the ideals of the Federation and the things that happen outside the Federation. You know, the universe is not just our myopic view of it. Mm-hmm. And so I think one of the beauties of this episode is that it takes all of the world building that this season has been doing, and it hits the accelerator on that to truly give us, I think, a fuller understanding of exactly what the occupation was for the Bajorans. Mm-hmm. And I think what it helps do is that the way that it describes this as well, I think it helps make the connections with something that we as human beings on planet Earth after the Second World War became very familiar with, which was the genocide of the Jews attempted by the Nazis and the Holocaust. And it puts into those terms what the Bajorans went through. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I think in that world building, it just brings to light for us, I think, the severity of the occupation, and in a way that then allows us to be able to ask a lot of really big questions and also deal with a lot of really big emotions from these characters as to what this type of act would cause on both sides, from the Cardassians to the Bajorans, which I think is probably one of the best parts about the episode, is that it shows the impact of these actions on both sides coin, which is really well done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned the Holocaust, and in this episode, that is the inspiration for the story. There's a stage play called The Man in the Glass Booth by Robert Shaw, and that is where the inspiration for the plot actually comes from. And I think that it mirrors that story quite well and puts the Star Trek wrapper with the Bajorans and the Cardassians on it in a way that it feels completely natural for the story here, and also highlights how this issue, which we'll talk about a lot today, I'm sure, of collective crimes and personal guilt, and how two sides can try to come to terms many years later after conflict has taken place. Mm-hmm. And So that's definitely the inspiration for the story. And as far as the world building goes, what I see when I watch this, every time I rewatch it, it just always is driven home to me how, like you said, it hits the accelerator here. Emissary sets up, well, even TNG had set up what was going on with the Bajorans and the Cardassian occupation, but Emissary really puts that down as the foundation for the series and why the Federation's here, why Sisko is here to lead what's going on. Sets up the conflict within the crew in terms of Sisko's here to do a job to try to help Bajor move forward, but there's this lingering hatred which gets channeled primarily through Kira's character. But then throughout season one, while we do touch on Bajor here and there, we get a lot of kind of typical Star Trek stories, as we've discussed here on the show through this season one rewatch. But here, the descriptions that Kira gives of what happened, and then the descriptions that Maritz gives of what happened in those camps and what happened to the Bajorans, what the Cardassians did, it really brings that to reality in a way that I don't think has happened yet on the show. And and it doesn't just do it for this one stage play that we get here in the holding cell, but it does it for everything moving forward, because we get conflict in the ideas of the Federation and Bajor in the next episode, and then we kick off season two with the trilogy about all the machinations that are going on, the power struggle on Bajor. So it's almost like this is a starting point for the DS9 story that we really think of when we think about everything that happens from here on to the end.
Yeah. I'll do a quick connection here too with Dayton Ward, friend of the show's latest book called Pliable Truths, which deals with right before we entered the Deep Space Nine saga, in the sense of the Enterprise's story about being sent to Bajor after the Cardassians are pulling out, and the ramifications of all that. It's a phenomenal book. I recommend it to anyone highly. And in fact, by the time this episode drops, Dayton will have been on the show as well, so you can listen to that interview. But I think one of the things that this does, and it's something that is never quite touched upon in Deep Space Nine, which is a really interesting thing. And so one of the things that Dayton does is actually utilize this as a story point. You know, the fact that the Federation had not stepped in to help the Bajorans in those 50 years of this occupation, when they can't have been unaware of some of the types of atrocities that we hear about here.
Well, you've got a Bajoran officer in Starfleet at that point.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, in TNG, we saw the effects, right, in some of those episodes about what the Bajorans had gone through as well, that were helping to set up Deep Space Nine. And so what I find interesting about this episode, though, is that that is a question that I think kind of gets raised a little bit here that we don't actually really deal with, which is, the Federation, yes, is here now to help, but when Kira talks about what people went through in the Galatep camp, and then Maritza, who is trying to get himself executed because he feels the guilt, when he talks about that, you don't get any sense that he's not telling the truth of what it was like for most Cardassians at that camp and the joy that they took inflicting pain. In fact, the reason we don't is because we know from history this to be the case with camps like Auschwitz and others. And so this is something that which we are very familiar with. And I think it really does raise this incredibly interesting question that I wish that the series had kind of dealt with, which was Bajor could have used the Federation's help before this, and they didn't get it, and they didn't step in. And so now them coming in and making this difference here and looking to help Bajor get on its feet and to become fully sustainable in and of itself. And if it wants to join the Federation, if it doesn't want to join the Federation, okay, that's great too. So, but when I hear this story, I think it just brings to mind the ways in which one of the things that we don't actually see play out in this series, and a big question that we don't really necessarily see play out in the series, which is in some ways the Federation having to atone for never doing anything for its neighbor 50 years when this type of thing is happening. And it raises it. I wish they had, because one of the things it raises is a wonderful question about the Prime Directive, right? Like of interfering. It's like, when is law not enough? Like, because just because it's law doesn't make it right. Make it right. And I think that's a question that we kind of get here, especially when we come face to face with what the Bajorans had gone through. And I really, that's one of the things, and I really appreciate Dayton's book for discussing this, but it really colored my viewing of this episode, thinking about that, because the things that Kira says happened are just so awful to hear. You know, it's almost like we don't want to hear them because it's so terrible. And so, yeah, it's just an incredibly interesting, and I think it's the thing that we love most about Deep Space Nine. It's the complexity, right? We're dealing with the actual realities of our world as it is through this show, the way Star Trek was always meant to deal with that. And I think that's why we both feel this to be the show that does that the best, because it doesn't always have easy answers, right? And that's kind of what life is like. There are no easy answers, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think those complexities really kick off with this episode. Not that there aren't some prior to this, but here is where it really starts to be that series that's filled with shades of gray.
Well, and I'll just say, too, I think that Emissary starts that way.
Yeah.
And then it's almost like they were afraid to do that.
Yeah, they're
but the last
dipping
two
their
episodes
toes
of the
in,
season.
Right?
Yes, yeah. Yes. And we see little shades of it in the first season. Yeah. But I feel like these last two episodes, and then, of course, the beginning of season two, it's like they realize, oh, no, we're just going to go whole hog with this thing. We're not going to hold back anymore on the important stories that we can actually tell through this show.
Yeah.
And so I love that in some ways, like you're saying, it's this episode that kind of almost creates that dam being broken and the freedom to tell more of these type of stories.
Well, it's interesting that this episode was conceived in large part to save money. They needed a bottle show. Emissary, of course, cost a lot of money. The storyteller was a budget buster, apparently. And there are other things they do. And of course, just the effects that we see through season one at that point in television history were far more expensive and more difficult to produce than what would be the case today. And so they needed to save some money and they do this episode. And I think the reaction to it probably helped break that dam, as you say, because the next episode I also think is really phenomenal in the questions that it raises and how it presents those, where it gives validity to both sides, which is something that wasn't necessarily the case in Star Trek up to this point. That story, of course, had to already be in motion and being written as well. But then we have a bit of time before we get into season two. So I think that the reaction to Duet and then to In the Hands of the Prophets as well probably did make them feel like, okay, we can just dive into this now instead of dipping our toes into it, because we're getting a good reaction to it.
Yeah, I agree. Well, and two, you know, I think one of the things that helps the show, right, is that TNG is still on the air.
Yeah.
And so they are trying to find the ways to make the show feel different. And in that, limitation. We could call it a limitation, right? But really what it is a guidepost for them of think, okay, we have to find a way to be different so that people have a reason to watch this mm-hmm. show. And I think that's exactly what happens. And I think one of the ways in which we see that, Chris, in this episode is, you know, Kira's journey, right? Mm-hmm. It's an incredible journey for the character. And it's been, you know, happening this whole first season, right? We think about where she started and where she ends in this episode. I mean, I would posit to anyone that there's more character development for Kira in this first season than there is for pretty much any single character in all of TNG.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
I think that's incredible because when she says to the Bajoran who murdered Maritza, he was innocent. Mm-hmm. And he says he was a Cardassian. Yeah. And her face is just like she's face to face in some ways with who she used to be. And she's forever changed mm-hmm. now. And it's just outstanding.
Yeah, I think that, of course, when she turns off the force field and she says, I'm letting you go, that was a monumental moment and a huge shift for her character. It was a revelation yes. for her. And a lot of stories would have stopped there. But for it to not end there for her, for him to then be murdered by a Bajoran, walking down the promenade, the last moment before he's going to be off away from the station was just, yeah, it was a knife in the back of all of the beliefs that she had been clinging to for these years since the occupation. And as you just mentioned, she asks Kynon, this Bajoran, why did you do that? He wasn't Dar-Heul. He's a Cardassian. That's reason enough, is the response. And then she says, no, it's not. And that's the final line of the episode. And just those two final lines, the exchange, I thought was such a powerful way to end the story.
Yes.
It's a phenomenal story.
No, I mean, I could not agree with you more. And again, like you said, when you think about that, legitimately, it's two lines of dialogue. Mm-hmm. And it's so incredibly powerful the way this story has built up to two lines of dialogue
yeah.
that completely juxtapose who Kira used to be and who she is now. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just think that what it does is it allows you to go through this with the character, but it also makes you ask those same type of questions. Who might I feel this way about? You know, who might I myself discount because they are insert whatever you want here, mm-hmm. right? Whatever label you want. That just because they are this, I ignore them or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just, it's incredibly powerful. And again, it's one of the things that I just really was thinking about. One of the things you had mentioned before we even started recording was, you know, the beauty of this episode is the way in which it is still so relevant mm-hmm. for today. And I find that to be just incredibly interesting to me that this still is an episode that has so much to say. It's not just referencing things that have happened in the past, but we're talking about things that, you know, we could ask these questions about now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there are conflicts going on right now that years down the road, the people involved are going to be asking the same questions of themselves as we see here. It's just a constant through human existence. I think it probably always will be as long as we're around. And that's very unfortunate. Of course, it also, we have the same situation as you were talking about in the lead up to the series itself and what Dayton covers in his book of why did the Federation not assist? Why did they not get involved? And we see that in the world today as well, with countries deciding whether to get involved in helping others or not. So it is a universal theme. You mentioned the title of Dayton's new book, which you've been talking about, is Pliable Truths. And the exchange between Dax and Kira, I think, fits well into this idea where Dax asks, are you worried that maybe he's right? And Kira says, all I want is to see him punished. Of course, Dax asks, even if he's just a file clerk. And Kira says, that's just it. I don't want him to be a file clerk. I want him to be something worse. So it's a case where, you know, Kira, she's looking for the situation to fit what she, to fit the facts that she wants, right? Even if they're not the facts, right? And that's, I think, of course, that is the core to the story, because it's also what we're seeing on this Maritz side, right?
Right.
Maritz has created this whole story for himself where he's tried to pretend that he was Goldar Heel because he feels like there has to be some atonement for what happened. And it's his way punishing Maritz or Goldar Heel for Kira is a way of coming to terms with her experiences during the occupation. And on the flip side, Maritz pretending to be Goldar Heel to try to get himself executed is his way of coming to terms with it and atonement for himself. So that juxtaposition here, it just really shows how the real world is and how people feel guilt, feel the need for vengeance on each side, but also are willfully blind to information because they want to see a situation that would give them the facts to support their view, their position.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's so interesting about this is in the question of whether or not you are looking for vengeance or you are truly looking for justice is the question, right? And what the beauty of this episode is that Kira is able to admit what I really want is vengeance. That's what my heart kind of wants, right? And yet she has enough self-control to be able to rein that in. And I think that the beauty of that is that she comes to a place where she allows the truth of the matter, the facts of the matter, to dictate whether or not this person truly deserves punishment, right? And I think that's the thing that I love so much about this episode, is that it clearly shows this isn't about our feelings. This is about the truth, and the truth is very important, and therefore it can't be a truth where it what's true for you is true for you and what's true for me is true for me. Because if that's the case, you end up being the person who murders the Cardassian that doesn't deserve to be murdered because he's just a Cardassian and that's the way you feel.
Yeah.
Right? For there to be an actual truth that we hold to outside of us that is in line with the reality of the universe and facts is very important for this episode. And I love the way that this, I think, honestly, in so many ways, this episode is one that is pointing a finger at our society as it is now and shaking its finger and just wagging its head like, you know, what the heck are you guys doing? Because you're being driven by your emotions and not by the truth.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of the turn here for Kira, right? Is that she understands this. It allows for her to be able to control those just like animal urges and rein them in. And it allows her to come to a place where she shows mercy and grace to somebody that she would never in her wildest imagination ever thought of herself being able to do. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, just even as we're talking about it, I'm just so blown away by the absolute depth of this episode and how, and we've talked about this so many times, just incredibly relevant it still is to our world and how it has so much to say to us. And if we just had ears to listen, maybe this world might be a slightly better place.
Yeah. I'm not sure how soon those ears to listen are going to come around, but the
probably not, but you know, one can hope and pray.
Yeah. The other great thing about the story is that her reaching that point of showing mercy, it happens. She turns off the force field right after Moritz finally breaks down from the memories of what happened when he's describing Ezgol Darhil. He's describing how Moritz would cower, but in recounting what are actually his own memories, he breaks down. But it isn't just that emotional moment that moves Kira to show mercy. It's this whole drawn-out process of investigation and uncovering facts and examining information and trying to find the truth and actually considering what is being uncovered that positions her to be able to show mercy in that moment. And I think that's a really important thing that also society could learn today.
Well, and what's beautiful about the episode is that the other thing that this does, right, it juxtaposes Moritz with Dukat.
Yeah, yeah.
Moritz, who couldn't have done anything, right? He was legitimately a file clerk. He's basically being forced to do this job. Yeah. He really doesn't have a way to do anything different, right? He would have just been killed, right? And yet still his remorse for not being able to do anything is juxtaposed against Dukat, who is willingly been involved in the occupation and heinous acts against these people, and yet has no more remorse and tries to downplay what happened by saying it wasn't really a big deal. And I think that's the thing that this show does. And when we were talking, it connects with the world building, right? This is the only show that has treated alien species like full-fledged alien species so that not everybody is a monoculture.
Like real societies. And yeah.
Yes, exactly. And so we're seeing the utter difference between a man like Moritz and a man like Dukat. They're both of the same species. They're both from the same culture. And yet they're diametrically opposed to one another in how they are dealing with what happened during the occupation, what they were involved in, right? One man has remorse for not being able to do anything. Another man has zero remorse for all the things he willingly did. And so I don't know, man. It's just such an incredible episode that allows us to dive into the depths of these characters, and it allows us to dive into the absolute depths of some of the deepest questions we have as human beings.
Yeah. Well, that contrast brings me to one point I did want to get your opinion on. Moritz says that he's doing this for Cardassia. He says Cardassia will only survive if it stands before Bajor and admits the truth. My trial will force Cardassia to admit its guilt, and we're guilty, all of us. My death is necessary. Whereas, as you say, Dukat is like, it's not really a big deal, and he's going to hold fast to his view of the situation. Do you think that if Cardassia, at this point, soon after the occupation, had stood up and tried to reconcile with Bajor and take responsibility for what had happened, could they have avoided their ultimate destruction at the hands of the Dominion later on?
I think that's an excellent question, and I actually think the answer is yes. I think that the interesting thing about the Cardassians as a species is that one of the major themes running through their society is pride.
Mm-hmm.
And the proverb goes, pride goes before the fall.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what happens, right? They will not admit to themselves that as a whole, as a society, that they made a terrible mistake,
mm-hmm.
right? And I think the beauty of this episode is that when Moritz is pretending to be Goldar Heel and he talks about the glories of what they were able to do against the Bajorans and what they perpetrated against them because they were building an empire,
mm-hmm.
I think that that is actually the sentiment of many Cardassians in general. And because of their lack of remorse and because of their hubris, they end up falling into the trap of the Dominion because they believe themselves to be people who should be ruling over others mm-hmm. and not working cooperatively with others. And so, yeah. No, I think he's 100% correct. And I do think it would have been fascinating to see like an alternate timeline where, you know, Cardassia mm-hmm. does show ultimate remorse for its actions. And I think, you know, again, that's the terrifying thing. We're living right now in a world and in a society where people are allowing others to denigrate and to other people in a way that we haven't seen to this level, you know, since like the 1920s.
Yeah.
And it's pretty terrifying, yeah. right? That we thought we had learned our lesson and apparently we haven't.
Well, that's the most shocking thing is that, yeah, it seems like we had learned our lesson and then now it's become so accepted that it is frightening.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. So the last item to touch on quickly here as we wrap up is just the story's unlikely source. I find it fascinating that this story was pitched by two interns, Lisa Rich and Gene Kerrigan Fauci. And you might think that, well, okay, they were interns at season one and they went on to be big parts of DS9 storytelling. But no, they only have 3 credits and they're all together in all of Star Trek. They share teleplay credits on Liaisons from The Next Generation and then teleplay credits on Move Along Home here on DS9 and then the story for Duet, and that's it. And so it's like it's just a blip, an idea that came up from 2 people who were production interns on the show, and what they gave us is not only one of the greatest stories in Deep Space Nine, but as we've said, one of the greatest stories in all of Star Trek, which is now approaching 1,000 episodes. Mm-hmm. I mean, what do you think that it says about not only their talents, but the premise of this series of Deep Space Nine, mm-hmm. that one of its most masterful stories could come from a source like that rather than the usual lead writers,
the usual suspects.
Yeah, the usual suspects. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because I mean, Liaisons is a fantastic episode mm-hmm. of TNG, right?
And Move Along Home is a fantastic episode of Deep Space Nine for some
home,
people.
We've talked about frequently, you know, not an absolute classic, but has its charms in some ways.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think what it does go to show is that these 2 interns, I think, did have a pretty good understanding of Star Trek. I mean, to write Liaisons, mm-hmm. Which is another intensely personal character driven show with Picard.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, one of my favorites, actually. in that series, especially since we actually reference a previous episode in that one, you know, they seem to kind of get that same vibe right in this episode. And that's pretty incredible, if you ask me. I mean, it goes to show, and I think, you know, Star Trek itself made a habit of looking for scripts from anyone. And if you had the ability to write a good script, it really didn't matter where it came from. And gotta appreciate them for that, right? They weren't so full of themselves in the writer's room to not see potential and talent in just about anybody who wanted to try their hand at this. And, you know, of course, they might clean up scripts and those type of things and whatnot. But still, I think it's so thankful that that was the case. And in some ways, I think, you know, a lot of that is due to the fact that we're writing this, you know, the season only has, what, 20, I think it's 21 episodes because they count.
It's actually 19.
Okay, yeah. 19 episodes. Yeah. Yes. So, but, you know, the other seasons, they're trying to, you know, fill, you know, 26 episodes of television. And a lot of times that's part of the reason that they're looking at these other writers and these other sources. But, you know, for every Profit and Lace type of episode, you get some gems like a liaison or duet. Yeah. And it's just, wow.
I think it also shows how Rich and Kerrigan Fauci understood human nature, because that's what's at the core of these stories. You mentioned liaison's a very personal story, as is this one. And also, they're able to break with some of the norms. Liaison's is one of only three episodes, I believe, in The Next Generation that doesn't have any scenes on the bridge of the ship. And here, this is one of very, very few episodes in all of Star Trek that doesn't have a B plot. It's just this one plot from start to finish, which is also quite unusual. So, you know, they're telling stories that in some ways break with the norms a little bit. But I think that it fits really well here on DS9 because of the foundation of the series being so much about the characters and how the world around them affects them instead of how they affect the world around them, which is what happened with the Enterprise D flying around from planet to planet so much.
Yeah,
but anyway, it's a very interesting, unlikely source for one of the greatest stories in the franchise. All right. Well, any final thoughts, and what's your rating for this one?
Well, Chris, I think it come as no surprise that this is a clear 5 for me out of 5, a 10 for 10, a 20 for 20, 100 out of 100. This is just an incredible episode that I enjoy rewatching every single time, you know, and I love what it does for the character of Kira. I love what it does for the storytelling of Deep Space Nine in general. And it's wonderful. So, I couldn't give it higher marks. What about you?
Yeah, I've already shared how much I love the episode throughout, but I'm actually going to have to give this one a 1. And that's one incredible debate. I wasn't going to give it 100 files that need to be filed away by a file clerk, but I thought that was a little bit of a clunky rating. So we'll go with the incredible debate. Everyone, we would love to hear your thoughts on Duet as well. There are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the best way is to go to Facebook and join the Babel Conference. That is our listeners group. If you're joining for the first time, please do answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. It's a closed group. It's there to extend the conversations beyond the podcast. So we want to have it there just for listeners. And once you're there, you'll see a post for this episode on the timeline, and you can share your thoughts with Matthew and me and fellow listeners right there. Of course, you can also send us email. Go to our website, trek.fm/contact. Use the form you find there. Choose to send to a show and choose the orb, and that will come right over to Matthew and me by email. And you can find us everywhere in social media. Our username is trekfm. And if your podcast app of choice allows you to leave a rating and a review, we'd love to get that from you as well. Now, Matthew, when you're not reviewing off-station requests for information regarding Major Kira, where can people find you?
Well, Chris, you can find me all over social media under the name MattRushing02. Of course, outside the Orb and the Star Trek talk, you can find me over on the 602 Club talking about all of the franchises we love outside of Star Trek. You can find me doing Warp 5, The Artificial Tango, and Saddle Up with you as well, as we talk about a lot of other Star Trek stuff. And, of course, you'll find me every once in a while on Literary Treks, talk about the books and the comics of Star Trek. Over on the Nerd Party Network, two shows. One's called Owl Posts, all about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series. And then on Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills, as we are talking Star Wars each and every week. But Chris, where can people find you?
Well, by the way, Matthew, that reminds me, you mentioned Literary Treks. At the beginning of the show, you mentioned that by the time this drops, Dayton would have been on the show so people can hear the discussion of Pliable Truths with him. The show being referred to there is Literary Treks, not The Orb. So if you want to hear Dayton's interview, be sure to tune in to
Literary Treks. Oh, did I say that earlier? Treks.
You just said the show. You didn't say the name of it.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, Thank you.
Yeah. And as far as I go, you can find me elsewhere on the network, as you mentioned, doing all of those podcasts with you. You can also find me in many episodes across many shows in the back catalog. And if you'd like to chat about Star Trek in social media, I'd love to hear from you. My username everywhere is C. Brian Jones, the letter C and Brian with a Y. And if you'd like to help us keep this rewatch and all those other shows that we're doing going, we could definitely use your help. To find out how to support the network, how to get involved, please visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. We would not be here without the support of all of you listening. So thank you to everyone who's helping us already. Well, Matthew, next time, we're going to close out season one with a little debate between Keiko O'Brien and an exciting new character to the show. So I'm looking forward to that.
Well, Chris, I can't wait for that. And we will see you next time as we gaze into the Orb.